Welcome, everybody. My name is Maggie Dawn. You are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I've got a fine co-host with me this afternoon, Tom Paulsiewicz, and we're very pleased to bring back to the show Dr. Liana Fix. She's a scholar at the Council on Foreign Relations, which is basically America's, A-plus grade think tank on all things foreign policy. It's where the smartest people work, who know all
that's
about
too much praise, Maggie. Thank you.
hardly.
I mean, it's not just a bunch of people who watch some YouTubes and then got together. And then no.
Well, we think about the YouTubes for long.
There you go. It's so great to have you back, Dr. Fix.
Thank you.
We have been incredibly focused on these elections that have happened just this past week, as well as the economic chaos. Looks like the S&P is going to be down potentially well over 5% today with Donald Trump's announcement of tariffs, which do relate back up, of course, to foreign policy. But it seems that for a lot of Americans, what is happening in Ukraine and the bizarre, I think I can use that word, triangulation that Donald Trump is attempting with Vladimir Putin has fallen a little bit out of our attention span momentarily. It's so very important to bring you back. Where do things stand right now? Let's just do a status update. Do we have a ceasefire? Are we closer to a potential peace deal? What does that look like? What is the current status, Dr. Fix?
So it actually looks like the Trump administration is currently stuck with this, with its approach. So the idea was you bring both sides to the table by applying sticks and carrots to both sides. And there has been a lot of outrage about the very strong and big sticks that have been applied to Ukraine. Towards Russia, the Trump administration has been a little bit more accommodating. They have tried through positive reinforcement, through concessions, convince the Russian side that a ceasefire is in their interest. But now we're in a situation where Ukraine has agreed to a full and complete ceasefire, and Russia does not. And Russia instead demands a continuation of talks about what they call the root causes of the problem, which is Russian code speak for let's talk whatever we don't like what has happened in the last 20 years. And Moscow is underestimating that President Trump's patience is going to run out. He wants to see a ceasefire. Russia wants, it's dragging its feet. And that's where we are right now and why Donald Trump has become more critical of Vladimir Putin in his recent comments.
I have been a bit surprised at Trump's expressed frustration publicly with Vladimir Putin. How realistic is it, or is it simply a fool's errand to think that we might be able to get Vladimir Putin through carrot or stick to a ceasefire? Is that actually a possibility, Dr. Fix?
I would not completely exclude it, but it depends on the sticks that you're willing to apply. So strong sticks would be, for example, more sanctions on Russia, especially targeting oil, which continues to be one of the main sources for Russia's regime stability. Also, you can maximize the support and the military support you give to Ukraine to tell Vladimir Putin, well, look, if you don't come to the table, Ukraine will actually start beating you again on the battlefield. So there are some ways that the United States can apply pressure, but so far the hope seems to be in the White House that because of the special friendly relationship between Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin, some progress might be achieved via that channel. And Vladimir Putin has obviously tried to cultivate that. He sent President Trump a portrait. He talked about how he has prayed for President Trump after the assassination attack. But that alone will not be enough for Vladimir Putin to avoid what he doesn't want, a ceasefire.
Yeah, it just seems to me, though, it's a little bit performative. And that's just my opinion on Trump's side is he's got to at least pretend to say something, because doesn't it seem like every week there's a delay in the ceasefire that it's actually to Russia's advantage to continue talking versus going right to a ceasefire? Because as I understand, Ukraine doesn't have a great flow of weapons coming into their country at this point. So every week that goes by, it increases Russia's hand, so to speak.
Absolutely. Russia wants peace talks without a ceasefire. So they want peace talks and a normalization of US-Russia relations without giving anything in return. And I think even for a Trump administration, that's difficult. What would be smarter is to agree to a ceasefire, keep it in place for a couple of weeks, and then blame Ukraine for breaking the ceasefire. That would be something, if I were an advisor to the Kremlin, which thank God I'm not, which would be my recommendation to Vladimir Putin right now, but he doesn't seem to be willing to go that far and take that step.
Let me ask a related question, and I'll just note this for folks that are listening. I went through the, in detail, combed through the list of tariffs that have been deployed by Donald Trump in the last 24 hours. Notably, Russia not on the list. Now, granted, there's a lot of sanctions and other things in place, but it's if we're taxing, putting tariffs on islands that have only penguins, you would think even as symbol, we would include Russia on that list. But getting back to specifically the situation with Ukraine, Dr. Fix, is there any solution setting aside a potential ceasefire as the contours, as the negotiation over a more permanent peaceful resolution are sketched out? Is there any permanent solution here that you think would be acceptable to Vladimir Putin that returns Ukraine to its post or pre-invasion state? And we can, however you want to date that, depending on whom you're talking to, that's the most recent Russian incursion or going back even further. Or do you think that Vladimir Putin is going to hold firm that at least some of the Ukrainian territory that Russia has in effect annexed is going to have to be turned over to Russia if there is a more permanent solution reached?
Yeah, so the best outcome that we can hope for is a frozen conflict. And frozen is not the right word, because those frozen conflicts are never frozen. There's actually continuous fighting on the ground. But what could work is to, if Vladimir Putin would keep what he has, it would not be obviously acknowledged as Russian territory, never, ever. But the rest of Ukraine could move towards the West, could move towards the European Union, could move towards integration into NATO structures. But again, from Vladimir Putin's perspective, the aim is a neutralized Ukraine, not only a neutral Ukraine, a neutralized Ukraine that belongs to Russia's sphere of influence in the same way as Belarus belongs to Russia's sphere of influence by being not de facto a state anymore, but basically just a region that belongs to the bigger Russian Empire there. Now, the hope is that Vladimir Putin would at some point, through pressure, be willing to postpone his aim, to say, for the moment, I'm not able to achieve this. Let me turn this into a frozen conflict. I'll try again in 5 years. That's the best what we can hope for. And to becoming back to the tariffs that you mentioned, there is just a little bit of trade between the US and Russia, but there still exists some trade, which again shows that there is some conscious thinking about the Russia part in the administration to deliberately exclude it from this really, really long list of inhibited or uninhibited countries that would have.
Yeah, so I think one of the questions I have in the back of my head is, as the United States has pulled back on funding, especially military funding to Ukraine, the European Union and specifically NATO has said, all right, we're going to try to step in at some point. How long is that going to take, and how does that play into these negotiations?
So there are two aspects to that. The first aspect is money. That is solvable because the European Union is a rich bloc. Also, the European Union could finally seize the Russian frozen assets that are in Belgium and could use that for Ukraine. The second part is the weapons that Ukraine needs. Some of those are only produced in the United States. So even if the European Union says we take over all of the military needs from Ukraine, that's just staff that European NATO allies cannot send to Ukraine. So the United States needs to stay in the picture. And then there's also the question, if Europeans sometimes very proudly say, we will help Ukraine to say no to a bad deal. But in the end, Europeans are also very vulnerable, right? And if we have an escalation dominance where Europeans are threatened that, for example, protection through NATO will be withdrawn if they don't support a certain deal that is struck between Ukraine and Russia, at some point Europeans will think about their own security. So I appreciate all the efforts that Europeans are doing. I think it's important, but Europeans alone cannot be the saver of last resort for Ukraine if the United States disappears.
I want to ask you, Dr. Fix, and folks, if you're just joining us, you've tuned in, we've got Dr. Liana Fix here on the Maggie Dawn Show. She is with the Council on Foreign Relations and expert on Russia and Ukraine. I want to ask a question that's going to sound a bit cheeky, but I don't mean it that way at all. How is a peace deal negotiated with two leaders, meaning Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin, who are two of the world's most consummate liars and spin doctors, and two of the world's most consummate bullies? Part of peace processes is that representations can be made in negotiations that can be relied upon even by nations that are in conflict. Where that is not present, how do you even facilitate a peace process negotiation? This has been a question that has been dogging me. I think we're seeing it cropping up again in economic policy. How do businesses make decisions if you can't rely on actors taking consistent and somewhat predictable action? This is that translated into the peace process for Ukraine and Russia. How do we move forward when we've got two men that are at the table who seem to change their viewpoint depending on which way the wind blows, who will say anything and frankly bully anyone, allies included, by any means necessary to get what is in their best interest in the next day, not in the best interest of their people or their country in the medium or long term?
Well, that is exactly this concern. It's exactly why the Europeans are right now talking about putting boots on the ground in Ukraine if a ceasefire is achieved. And the idea behind that is, can we really trust both Trump and Putin to comply with a deal? Would it be helpful if Europeans would be on the ground to deter Vladimir Putin from breaking a ceasefire? In theory, that's a good idea. In practice, obviously, Europe's militaries and armies are not in great shape. So if they put even a small contingent into Ukraine, how much is actually left in core Europe? ? So if Russia tries to test Europe's willingness, how much is left that would sort of follow up from this initial contingent? And the second question for Europeans is, well, would Donald Trump actually support that? So would he, if we put our troops on the ground, would he tell Vladimir Putin, you better not touch those troops or we have a problem? Or would he say, well, I don't care if there's an escalation with those troops. But in principle, the idea for Europeans is, how can we secure a deal if we cannot trust both sides?
Short question here. Is Ukraine joining NATO off the table for the foreseeable future, Dr. Fix?
Well, I think it would be the wrong decision to take it off the table, because it's the cheapest and the best way to secure Ukraine's and Europe's security. But I certainly don't see it in the next 4 years. Again, we would not have predicted what happens in 2022 with Sweden and Finland becoming NATO members. I'm certainly not going to exclude it for the next 10 years. Many things can happen.
We're approaching the 76th anniversary of NATO on April 8th. I was introduced to you and we spoke for the first time a year ago in celebration of the 75th anniversary of the world's strongest, longest lasting, most enduring military alliance. What do you think the future holds for NATO, Dr. Fix, in light of Trump's utter unreliability?
Well, hopefully increased defense spending by Europeans that at some point will make it less dangerous for Europeans to fully rely on the United States and finally take their own security.
Thanks so much. It has been an absolute pleasure to have you, Dr. Fix, especially with your voice a little froggy. We'll have you back again quite soon. Keep it locked. Tom and I are going to zoom out, tell you what the big picture is when we come back after these brief messages. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Join us, 855-752-4842, 855-75-SAVE. I feel the sky tumbling down, a tumbling down, a tumbling down, a tumbling down.